Now, Kirby Anderson.
Thank you for joining me for the Monday edition of Point of View. This first hour, we're going to spend some time talking about President Donald Trump. Are you going to vote for him or vote against him? Do you agree with him or disagree with him? We're going to be using a new book that has just come out, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? And we'll do our best to try to talk about some of the pros and cons and help you think that through as a Christian. But let me just mention as well, a little bit later we might get into a few of the articles I've posted. One having to do with the decision by Grace Community Church and, again, Pastor John MacArthur to actually hold services in the midst of the mandated lockdown in the state of California. Also one by Carl Jackson, Six Reasons Black Christians Must Denounce Black Lives Matter. So we may get into that a little bit later. But we want to focus as much of our time and attention this hour by a very good book written by Dr. Michael Brown. He's been on the program with us before, founder and president of Ask Dr. Brown Ministries. Of course, he is the host of the syndicated talk radio program, The Line of Fire, which he'll be on in just about an hour. Holds a PhD from New York University, has been a visiting or adjunct professor at Southern Evangelical Seminary, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, Fuller Theological Seminary, Denver Theological Seminary, King's Seminary, Regent University School of Divinity, and the author of about 35 different books, but we're going to focus some of our time and attention today on Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? And Dr. Brown, always great to have you on the program with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. What a day to be on the radio, huh?
Yeah. Well, and you're going to be busy even after we finish here. Of course, I will be as well. But I love how you say in your book, you know, President Trump has surrounded himself with evangelical leaders. He has a strong evangelical vice president, perhaps the most evangelical cabinet in history, which I think is a fair statement, welcomes prayer and receives it humbly. At the same time, no president in memory has a less evangelical past and behaves publicly in a less evangelical manner than this president. So this, if you will, is one of the chapters in your book, The Enigma of Donald Trump and the Quandary of Evangelicals. And that's kind of a theme for the book, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, because we've never had a president like Donald Trump. Not just the kind of guy he is, being unique and different and not a politician and an outsider and all of that. But on the one hand, he's done more for evangelical causes than any president in memory. More for the pro-life cause, openly, boldly, even speaking at the pro-life rally in January, first time a president's done that, fighting for religious liberty, keeping his door open to evangelicals as he promised, standing for family, doing things for poor and hurting people, facing up to the tyranny of China and dictators around the world, pushing back against radical LGBTQ extremism, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, all the things that he promised he would do that he's done. And we've had other presidents that evangelicals helped elect, but once they're in, they kind of put a wall up and we don't have the same access and things change. Trump's been the opposite. So you could say he's done more for evangelical causes than any president in memory, but he's also done more to hurt the evangelical cause than any president in memory, because he behaves a certain way. He can be juvenile with his tweets. He throws people under the bus. He calls people dogs. And to the extent we are looked at as apologists for Donald Trump, it hurts our witness. So which way do we go? And if we don't vote for him, then it was Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. Now it could be, if we don't vote for him, it's social anarchy, it's socialism. So it's a really precarious situation, one that we have to walk through wisely because the stakes are very high.
Well, and again, I appreciate the fact that even early on you quote from some individuals we've had on the program. Wayne Grudem, for example, that list that you created is certainly one of his. We've had Peter Wehner on here as well. By the way, a lot of pushback on that one, as you can imagine, because let's give him his due, a Republican, a Christian, but also a never-Trumper who talks about Trump's disordered personality and his unhealthy patterns of thinking and his addiction to lying. I think he called him a psychopathic liar or something like that when he was on the program here, and a number of others. So you really try to help us understand what you have, the almost the always Trumpers or the usual Trumpers, and then the never Trumpers who are all kind of speaking into this. And your an attempt is to try to help us kind of think through what we can or cannot say, what we should and should not say. Is that a fair kind of assessment of what you were trying to do in the book?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, as fellow evangelicals, we need to understand each other. And we need to know where we're coming from and why. And we need to find a way ultimately to unite around Jesus, even if we differ about Donald Trump, rather than savaging each other and tearing each other up in the process. But in point of fact, the opinions on both sides are quite extreme. I voted for Trump in 2016. I opposed him in the primaries. I was a Ted Cruz guy. I didn't trust him. Obviously, I didn't like his past. I didn't think we could take his word. But I kept saying the whole time, I hope I'm wrong. And if it's him versus Hillary, I'll reassess. So I did vote for him. And the fears in terms of what he would do badly, those have been realized. But the hopes of what he would do rightly have been exceeded in many ways. And what I try to do in the book is lay out, okay, here's the case against Trump, primarily from evangelicals or professing Christians. Here's the case against Trump. Here's the case for Trump. And here's how we can support him as president without compromising our witness. But you mentioned having Peter Wehner on. Of course, I quote him in the book as a never-Trumper. I had Shane Claiborne on, a red-letter activist Christian, Shane Claiborne, and I got pushback for that as well. But I quote Shane in the book. He said, I love Jesus, and it is precisely my love for Jesus that creates my outrage at Trump. When I look at the things Jesus said and compare them to the things Trump says, it's impossible to reconcile the two. I don't know how any Christian can defend Donald Trump. He said, Trump evangelicalism is a cult. Let us rebuke it in the name of Jesus. And then right after that, I quote Pastor Robert Jeffress, who in 2016 said, if you don't vote for Trump, you're a fool, basically. So how do we work these things out? And the first thing is we have to understand each perspective, and we have to agree that on the day we stand before Jesus, God is not going to say to us, what did you do with Donald Trump? That will not be the first question. The first question is, what did we do with Jesus? And that's where we have to start with ourselves and say, okay, even if we passionately differ, let's not savage each other. The world is tearing itself apart. We can't do that as the church right now.
Well said. And again, I like your simple formulation that you talk about in the book. Much of what Trump does is praiseworthy. Much of what Trump says is cringeworthy. And many of the people that we have, especially on our Friday roundtable, say, look, you know, I recognize he can be a bully and he can go after individuals and he tries to savage individuals. And sometimes he denies reality, which we've seen on the other side for years, and sometimes buys into conspiracy theory and all the rest. But if you're looking at what an individual was able to do and the kinds of policy pronouncements that were made and actually achieved, that's something that's worth mentioning. And so let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to spend some time talking first, of course, with Dr. Michael Brown. And if you would like to join us, and I know you would, 1-800-351-1212. But I think you're going to enjoy looking through this book and benefit from it, because it's really asking the question, will we pass the Trump test? 17 different chapters. We've looked at the kind of the enigma of Donald Trump. We'll talk about the love test, and we'll get into that idea of the cult of Trump versus Trump derangement syndrome. Then what a vote might or might not do in terms of your witness as a Christian. What about the so-called pocketbook principles and issues like that? And what happens in this particular case if someone else is elected? We'll cover all of that right after this.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
China has been in the news lately, and not just because of their mishandling of the coronavirus. A number of government officials have been warning of the danger China poses. And before we go any further, we're talking about the Chinese Communist Party and not the good people of China who have little control over what these communist leaders do. FBI Director Christopher Wray gave a shocking presentation earlier this month in which he mentioned that nearly half of all the FBI's current counterintelligence cases are focused just on China. He described China's frequent counterattacks, predatory practices, and economic espionage that have resulted in one of the largest transfers of wealth in human history. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo warned that Chinese leaders should back down in their military actions in the South China Sea. He said the world will not allow Beijing to treat the South China Sea as its maritime empire. America stands with our Southeast Asian allies and partners in protecting their sovereign rights to offshore resources. Attorney General William Barr was not only critical of the Chinese government, but of Hollywood and big tech for their cooperation with China. He said, I suspect Walt Disney would be disheartened to see how the company he founded deals with foreign dictatorships of our day. Daniel Blumenthal and Nicholas Eberstadt in a recent column argue that the Communist Chinese Party is far more powerful today than it was in Mao's time. That's quite a statement and a reminder that we should ask political candidates if they believe China poses a danger to the U.S. Already, President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden have given vastly different answers to that question. This is an important foreign policy issue for our time. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For more information about issues covered on Viewpoints, visit pointofview.net. Pointofview.net.
You're listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Continue our conversation today with Dr. Michael Brown as we talk about, will we pass the Trump test? And this is just a great opportunity for you to find out a little bit more. Also have a link to AskDrBrown.org. I think you will really appreciate all the material that is on his website. And again, we're talking about evangelicals at the crossroads. And Michael, for just a minute, let's talk about this whole idea of loyalty, because since when has loyalty to Donald Trump been the new test of evangelical orthodoxy? And since when has disloyalty to Trump be the test of orthodoxy, which is kind of the question you ask in your second chapter?
Yeah, it's really a remarkable thing that I've never seen. But basically, especially on social media, as people are interacting, that this is now the test. This is now what's going to prove whether you're really faithful to Jesus or not, how you stand with Donald Trump. And I think this is how it kind of developed. Many of us voted for Trump with some reluctance. We didn't think he was the best candidate, but we saw that it was him versus Hillary Clinton. We saw what she stood for. We felt, okay, let's vote and hope it comes out well. And then he keeps his word. That was amazing. And then he begins to make statements that we like. And then he begins to fight for us. And then we see the way that he gets savaged. And somehow this loyalty rises where we feel we have to defend Donald Trump at any cost, and that you're now attacking our man. And it's an odd thing, but because he fought for Christians and continues to push back against those that have become our enemies as well, he becomes somewhat of this champion figure that we feel we have to back. And then when we do that, we can look very foolish in the eyes of the world, because for years, we're evangelicals, we're the ones shouting character counts, morality matters, and you know, we're the values voters, and people are thinking, how can you support this man? On the flip side, I've seen this irrational hatred of Donald Trump. It's almost as if all of the radical left's talking points become the talking points for these never Trump Christians. And I found something really shocking, kind of an immature reaction or a fleshly reaction on each side. And I feel like this is one way that God is using Trump, because God is multitasking, obviously, that Trump has raised up a lot of the carnality and superficiality in the body today. And that's why I have a whole chapter asking, have we passed the love test?
Yes.
And it was kind of a devastating chapter to write, because I quote verse after verse after verse after verse after verse as to how we are to conduct ourselves. It doesn't mean we can't be strong. It doesn't mean we can't have conviction. It doesn't mean that we can't be clear and forceful. But it means that we have to treat each other with humility and grace and honor and respect. And in that part of the Trump test, we've really failed thus far. And it's the wrong time to fail, because the world is in chaos around us. Society is gripped with fear. People don't know what's coming tomorrow. We have the answer. If we could kind of hit a divine reset button for the church now and say, okay, we have our views about Trump, but that will not be our primary discussion. Our primary discussion will be the gospel and helping a dying world. I think we could do a lot better.
Yes. Well, again, if they would know us by our love, they aren't seeing some of that right now. So I certainly appreciate chapter 3. But let's jump ahead, because you sort of already alluded to chapter 4. And you start out by quoting David French. Now, he's been in studio with us and on many issues, religious liberty, Second Amendment, all sorts of things, evangelical attorney, Harvard graduate, served in the military, really have appreciated him. On the other hand, he thought about, even took for a while, the idea of maybe running against Donald Trump. So if you wanted somebody who's a card-carrying never-Trumper, he fits into that category, wouldn't you think? But he raises a good question. What about you people that used to be so upset about what Bill Clinton did in office, now seemingly turning a blind eye to some of the things at least Donald Trump has done in the past? How do you respond to some of those questions that people are asking?
Yeah, and what's really intense is David French, in the article that I cite, quotes from the Southern Baptist Convention, where they put out these resolutions years ago about righteousness, about standing for truth and morality, and you know, be it resolved that we will stand here and stand there. And French says, you know, that was when the Clintons were in charge. Now it's time to make America great again. New standards apply. So are we a bunch of hypocrites? And in the book, I quote statements from evangelical leaders during the days of Bill Clinton. Now, granted, his failures, moral failures, were while he was president, which is different in terms of sexual failures than Donald Trump. But it's very intense to read this because it can seem like we're really being hypocritical. So I have two responses to that. On the one hand, we have been hypocritical because we have used double standards, those that are liberal, those that are pro-abortion, those that have ideologies different than ours. We hold them to a certain standard, and look, you're immoral and bad character. And then because Trump is fighting for good causes, we say, well, it matters, but it's not as important. We're hypocrites in that regard, but we're not hypocrites in this regard. Trump has shown tremendous character in keeping his word. I cannot imagine the pressure he's under every day in the White House and the spiritual attack that comes against people in D.C., and yet he doesn't cave in. He's not wavered on key things he said he would stand for, key things he said he would do. Is it not a matter of character? And Dennis Prager points this out, and I quote him as well, that a man keeps his word, especially under pressure. And if you think back, say, just to moving the embassy to Jerusalem, that was law from the days of Bill Clinton on. He didn't do it. George W. Bush didn't do it. Barack Obama didn't do it. Trump did it, and the whole world did not fall apart. The whole Muslim world did not go crazy. He did it, and he kept his word. So the way I would phrase it is this. Character does count, and morality does matter. And in key areas where it's very important to us, Donald Trump has displayed strong character. On the flip side, because character does count, his character weaknesses have hurt him. In that sense, he's his own worst enemy.
Yes.
You know, he gives a great speech at Mount Rushmore, and it's great for civil rights, too, from Martin Luther King to Jackie Robinson. It was great. It was inspiring. And then the next day, or within hours, he goes after Bubba Wallace, the NASCAR driver, and tweets like, no, don't
just
do that.
Take this
and
away from him.
In an interview,
yes,
where he said, yeah. He said, I regret a lot of my tweets. So his character flaws do hurt him. So it's simple for me. I say, look, he is my president, not my savior. I don't like when he does those things. I wish he wouldn't, but here's why I'm voting for him. So we don't become his apologists. We don't become his defenders. We don't make ourselves look bad because we say, yeah, I don't like that either. But let me tell you the good that he's doing, and then we have a rational answer for the world.
I would think so. Just before I take a break, talk about this idea of a cult of Trump, because that came up in your interview. It's chapter 5 in your book. And, you know, I have certainly, and I know you have as well, studied cult leaders. Donald Trump is probably the least likely to be a cult leader, but yet that's the phrase we hear sometimes from some of our fellow evangelicals. What about that?
Yeah, well, sometimes we can rally around Trump in a way that does seem a little cult-like when our allegiance to him is so extreme. And I have friends think, what happened to you? You used to be so Bible-centered, now you're just a Trumpite. And I quote from Steve Hassan, a cult expert, in his book on the cult of Trump, and he talks about all the characteristics, etc. But the fact is, it's not true. Because if Trump moved away, I mean, Trump made the famous statement he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and everyone would still follow him. The fact is, if he moved away from his pro-life position, evangelicals would abandon him. If he stepped back from some of the key things he said he would do for religious liberty, etc., we'd step back. If he actually came out as a racist and supported white supremacy and neo-Nazis, we'd step back in an instant. I mean, he'd be rebuked privately, publicly. You just think when he pulled our troops or said he was going to pull our troops out of Syria, that brought public rebukes from Pat Robertson and even Franklin Graham. So it's not the cult of Trump. You do have the Trump derangement syndrome, where it seems that, you know, you watch news, you watch CNN, you think they're not even trying to be objective. They're not even trying to hide their bias. It's like a child, you stole my candy, I'm going to cry. Like, what happened to these professional people? And what I think, again, with Trump, is that he knows how to push certain buttons that bring out what is really in people's hearts. He knows how to push the right buttons. So some people, it ends up with almost this cult-like loyalty. With others, the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yes.
The bottom line is, if he moved away from any of his key pro-evangelical positions, we would not be voting for him. It's that simple.
I think so. Let's take a break, and we are privileged to have with us for a little bit longer Dr. Michael Brown. And when we come back, okay, let's get into this. Did God uniquely raise up Donald Trump? And has a vote for Donald Trump hurt our evangelical witness? And maybe a couple of other questions. Indeed, many people voted for Donald Trump because they saw the alternative Hillary Clinton as being objectionable. What about this time, given the fact that we assume the former Vice President Joe Biden will be the nominee, and we'll have a vice presidential nominee that we're still guessing about? We'll talk about all that right after these important messages.
Having civil conversations about important issues seems to be harder and harder. Various media outlets tell people what they should believe, why they should be outraged, and getting people to actually think, well, it can be difficult. Whether it's the gospel, tax issues, social policy, or just about anything else, you need to have solid information and clear thinking to address the hard issues. You need God's truth applied. And that's what you get in less than 2 minutes with Point of View's Viewpoints Commentary, a daily resource to help you be informed and think through the things we need to be talking about. It is free and will arrive in your inbox each day when you visit pointofview.net/signup. Sometimes we know we should say something, but we're silent because we're not quite sure what to say. Viewpoints Commentary can help you break the silence and change the narrative. It can make you a more equipped agent for truth. Get your free subscription to the Viewpoints Commentary at pointofview.net/signup. pointofview.net/signup. Point of View will continue after this.
You are listening to Point of View. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-351-1212. Less than 100 days, I think it's 98 days till the election. Who would you vote for, Donald Trump or most likely the Vice President, former Vice President Joe Biden? If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-351-1212. Dr. Michael Brown with us as we talk about his book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? And Michael, I thought we might as well get to one of the most significant chapters in your book, and of question that people have asked many times before. Did God uniquely raise up Donald Trump? Since you wrote a chapter on it, I'd love to hear your answer.
I say yes for two reasons, but then I need to qualify what that means.
Sure.
The first yes is just a totally natural, pragmatic yes. It was completely unlikely that Trump was going to beat all these Republican candidates. I mean, from Ted Cruz to Marco Rubio to Jeb Bush to on and on, you know, fine candidates, Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson and all these others, wide range. But the day of the elections, there were polls, prestigious polls, that gave Trump a 1% chance of winning. And, the highest was maybe 18%. So the fact he got in at all indicates something unusual going on, that the polls missed, that others missed. But there were different Christians in different parts of the world that felt that God showed them, some before the primaries, some early in the primaries, that Donald Trump would be the president of the United States. I remember some colleagues putting these words out and getting incredible flack. What are you talking about? How could you endorse him? Say, we're not endorsing him. We just believe God's going to use an unlikely man. And they pointed to King Cyrus in the Bible.
Yes.
So Cyrus is mentioned in Isaiah 44 and 45 prophetically. He was the king of Persia. He overthrew the Babylonian Empire. So he became basically the world ruler of the empire at that time. And what the kings would do, the Assyrian kings, the Babylonian kings, they would crush the exiles. They would crush those that they had conquered. Cyrus had a different policy. Cyrus said, you know, I'm going to send you back to your homeland. And in fact, I'm going to finance it for you to rebuild your temple, and you pray to your God for me. So that's what happens with Israel and the Jewish people. Second Chronicles 36 tells the story. But the whole thing about Cyrus is God says, I'm raising you up even though you don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that Cyrus was a true worshiper of Yahweh, but God was going to use him to do good to God's people, even to rebuild Jerusalem. And what most folks don't know is that we actually have the words of Cyrus preserved. It's called the Cyrus Cylinder that was written about 539 BC and was discovered in the late 1800s. My PhD is in Semitic languages, and this right. is what's written called Akkadian, the ancient language of the Babylonians and Assyrians. And Cyrus is praising Marduk, the god of Babylon, for raising him up. It's almost identical to Isaiah 45. Instead of recognizing it's Yahweh, the Lord, who did it, he's praising Marduk. He's full of himself. He's the king of all kings. And this is the man that God used to bless the Jewish people and restore Jerusalem. So the whole prophetic word was about the unlikelihood of a Donald Trump being used. Not that he was a fine Christian. Not that he was an on-fire Bible believer. To this day, I have no idea if he has any real connection to God or if he even reads the Bible. But he's being used for many good purposes. That doesn't mean, though, that everything he does is right. In other words, he's God's man. He's anointed. Don't touch the anointed. No, that's foolishness to have that attitude towards him. It would be foolish if we had that attitude towards our local pastor. You could never disagree with your pastor, let alone President of the United States. But I believe he has been uniquely raised up, and I believe him being raised up is doing lots of different things at the same time, revealing the extreme bias of the media, revealing how radically left the Democrat Party has become, revealing the tensions and divisions in our country, revealing even carnality in the body and our willingness to put our trust in a person instead of put our trust in the Lord. But if we can rightly put our trust in God and then recognize, okay, what's the president supposed to do? Is he supposed to bring moral reformation to America? No. Is he supposed to bring spiritual, cultural revolution? No. Is he supposed to bring awakening where people turn to God? No. Is he supposed to enact good policies and keep us safe? Yeah. Has he done that? Yeah, he's trying. So that's how I boil it down.
Very good. Let's take some phone calls along the way. We'll head up to Maine. Bobby, you're on with Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, hi. Oh, wow. Dr. Michael Brown, I listen to you every night, and I listen to Kirby, too. yeah,
awesome.
Okay, so I'm not asking this as a question, per se, for you to answer. When does Donald Trump get forgiveness from Christians, number one? That's my first point. Number two, Christians got their own problem, and let's not be high-minded, all these other Christians out there. They're carnal-minded, and they don't have a biblical view, and it just drives me crazy. I've listened to sermons and ministers for 25 years, and there's so many good ones out there and everything, but let's get on board, and Donald Trump has been hopped on and belittled, and it's unbelievable. And there's no case to be made. You're going to vote for the Democratic Party, who does nothing but do baby murdering, and it shouldn't even cross our thoughts who we're going to vote for. It's
sure.
Donald
well,
Trump.
Let me come to Michael, because, again, that gets us into just a minute. First of all, forgiveness, but second of all, the alternative. I mean, in some respects, I've had individuals in this studio even admit that right up almost to Election Day, they still couldn't bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump. And then they thought, what if I don't vote for him and Hillary Clinton and all the policies she would implement actually unfold, and then finally, reluctantly, they actually decided to vote for him. The same kind of question is up front now because, as you pointed out a minute ago, I think it's fair to say that the Democratic Party in 2020 is even more radical than it was in 2016 and certainly more radical than when Barack Obama was elected in 2008. So there is a lot on the table in terms of the stakes, and you talk about that certainly in chapter 13 of your book, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, what would have happened if Hillary Clinton was elected? Where would our religious liberties be? What would the courts look like? Look, there was a case in New York. New York decided they're going to ban counseling for anyone with unwanted same-sex attraction of any age. So an outrageous policy. An Orthodox Jewish counselor takes the state to court, backed by the Alliance Defending Freedom. They instantly say, okay, we change our mind. We're going to back off of this. Why? Because they knew the court this was going to be appealed to had new Trump appointees, and they knew they would lose. This affects our everyday life. So, look, we all agree it would be nice if Trump could use restraint in some of his words and if he could be more careful with the truth. But when it comes to stopping the slaughtering of the unborn, I'd rather see this guy standing up for the unborn than someone shouting your abortion and saying God bless Planned Parenthood. You know, when it comes down to who's going to fight against the tyranny of China and the persecution of Christians and other religious minorities there, will I pick Donald Trump or will I pick Joe Biden? When it comes to the question of do the Democrats stand for alerts towards socialism and even social anarchy, when we look at the cities with the protests and riots with Democrat governors and basically with the support of local mayors, is that the direction we want to go or not? So it's kind of a stark choice. And I bet a persecuted Christian in China, if you said, hey, this guy in America is fighting for you, can be a little nasty at times, they'd say, at least he's fighting for us. And a baby that's saved from abortion, I don't think that baby's going to say, well, I would have rather been aborted than had a nasty person. No, no. Thank God that Trump is standing for the key things he needs to stand for. And we have to bottom line it because right now it's pretty much a vote for Trump or social anarchy.
I think so. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll just chat briefly with Dr. Michael Brown. Then he'll have to go do his radio program as well. But let me point to a couple of things as we go to a break. First of all, we have a link to askdrbrown.org. And you don't even have to remember that because we have that link on the website, so you can find that. We also have a link to his Twitter feed and his Facebook page. So if you'd like to communicate with him, since we probably won't have time for all the phone calls that maybe some of you would like to make or comments, since we talked about China, let me just mention also my Viewpoints commentary today happens to be on the subject of China and just reminding you of a variety of different things that have unfolded just in the last week about China that our administration has been addressing. And it's been interesting to see that the Democratic platform, which we now have a chance to look for, is really downplaying the danger of China. So if you think China is a threat, and I think that we can see that whether we look at the South China Sea or whether we look at the fact that the FBI director Christopher Wray has said that almost half of all of their investigations right now, their counterintelligence cases, are focused just on China. Or you can look at some of the statements made by the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo about the South China Sea, or by the Attorney General William Barr, who was not only critical of the government but also of Hollywood and big tech. Not to mention closing down one of the consulates for China because of stealing intellectual property. There is a difference, and we'll come back and talk briefly about that with Michael Brown right after this.
Now, back to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Dr. Michael Brown with us for just a few more minutes as we talk about his book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? And if you find yourself saying, I'd really like to read the book, well, first of all, we have a link to his website. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Also have a link there where you can get it either in paperback or in Kindle, and I think you're going to find some great information. But Michael Brown, of course, you and I and many of our listeners are very supportive of the Nation of Israel. And it is amazing to me that even people in Israel that I've met, some Jews, some Gentiles, some Christians, some not, have said that we really think President Donald Trump is the best friend Israel has ever had. And given some of the other friends that certainly have been in the Oval Office, that's quite a statement. But in your chapter on the New World Order and Israel, we recognize that we're not just talking about Israel. We're also talking about other nations, European countries, and all sorts of tensions between us and Russia and China and the rest. And to think that through, again, is an important issue, because even today, my commentary on China illustrates again that you have a remarkably different set of statements being made about China from President Donald Trump and from former Vice President Joe Biden. So if foreign policy is another issue for you to consider in this election, I think you need to pay attention to what's in your chapter 14 of your book.
Yeah, look, we are dealing with global issues, and that's what some people point out. They say, look, no one's saying Trump is a perfect guy anywhere near it, but you need someone with incredible backbone and courage to take the stands that he's taken, especially some that are so politically incorrect. Most everyone else would have just crumbled or caved in or compromised. But there is a push for globalism. People may call it the New World Order and be skeptical, but George H.W. Bush gave his famous 1,000 Points of Light interview and talked about a New World Order. Angela Merkel basically said Trump has destroyed the New World Order. So there is a push for a globalism that can be unhealthy and often to America's detriment. And then China is a growing world power. I got off the phone with someone who was interacting with a Chinese church leader that was deported. They killed his friends and deported him to America, thinking that was the best thing they could do to hurt his work. And he says right now that watching from the viewpoint of communist China, America is one step from socialism, and Donald Trump is the only thing holding it back. And he also knows the only one that's going to stand up to China, stand up for the protesters in Hong Kong, stand up for persecuted religious minorities, is Trump, just as he stood up to his Islamic terrorism and named it for what it is. So we've got to look at bigger issues. Like, we've talked about the slaughter of the unborn. We've talked about religious liberties. We could talk about radical gay activism and the effect that has on our kids and schools and things like that. And then the global issues. And then we put everything in proper perspective. The church is called to do what the church is called to do. Hence my last chapter with how to pass the Trump test, which is, can we vote for him and support him as president without losing our testimony in the process? And I say yes, if we put the cross before the flag, if we proclaim that Jesus is our Savior, he gets my heart, my soul, my life, my all. Trump's my president. He gets my vote. We put things in proper categories. We regain our prophetic voice to the nation. These are big issues. It's a big election. Let's focus on what the church is called to do and put our proper emphasis there. And when it comes to vote, what are we going to do? It's a simple choice as far as I can see it.
Yes, again, 10 essential keys for passing the Trump test. And again, that's just one of the 17 chapters there. And just before I let you go, because I know you're going to be doing your own radio program, we have a link to askdrbrown.org. And for, first of all, our friends that want to witness to their friends, neighbors, coworkers that are Jewish, you certainly have some great resources there. And of course, you have all sorts of material that comes from your 35 different books, as well as all the op-eds and things that you have written in the stream and a variety of other places. But talk about what's available on your website just before we let you go.
Yeah, we have a threefold emphasis: revival in the church, gospel-based moral and cultural revolution in society, and redemption in Israel. The three R's: revival, revolution, redemption. So we have literally thousands of free articles, thousands of free videos, links to our radio broadcast, Jewish outreach material, debates we've had ranging from atheists to gay activists to Orthodox rabbis and others. So all those resources are there for free. And then at AskDrBrown.org, folks can connect with us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. And if they sign up for our emails, We've got a great little mini book called Seven Secrets of the Real Messiah. We send that out when folks sign up.
Yes, I would highly recommend that. It's a great resource. And again, I've produced material on the Messianic prophecy and some of that, but the Seven Secrets of the Real Messiah, which is a free ebook. And so I would encourage people to go there. Dr. Michael Brown, always great to have you on the program, and I look forward to the next opportunity.
Yeah, and thanks for all the great work you're doing. Keep it up, Kirby.